Welcome to our deep dive, listeners. Today we're tackling the world of proverbs, and you've given us some really interesting material to work with from a scholar named Dr. Ted Hildebrandt.
Yeah, Dr. Hildebrandt has really gone deep on this subject, hasn't he? We're going to be focusing on one of his lectures where he breaks down what proverbs are, you know, how they function, and why they still matter today.
It's more than just like remembering those catchy phrases our grandparents used to say, right? There's got to be something deeper going on.
Right. There is. And that's what's so fascinating about proverbs, I think. They seem so simple at first glance, but, you know, there's a whole lot more going on beneath the surface.
So where do we even begin? Like, how do you even define a proverb?
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? You know, you might think it's as simple as looking it up in the dictionary, but Dr. Hildebrandt actually points out that it's a lot more complex than that.
Oh, really? More complex how?
Well, you know, we often think of proverbs as these short, memorable sayings like actions speak louder than words, but there's got to be more to it than that, right?
Yeah, I mean, they are packed with wisdom, that's for sure. And they do get passed down through generations, but you're right, there's something else there.
Exactly. And Dr. Hildebrandt, he emphasizes that proverbs work on these different levels. For example, they often use metaphors to get their point across.
Metaphors. Like using an image to represent an idea.
Exactly. A bird in the hand is worth two in the bush isn't really about birds, is it?
No. It's about appreciating what you have instead of always chasing after what you don't. That's a great example. It makes you realize that there's a whole other layer of meaning beneath those familiar words, you know?
Right. And there are other terms, too, like adages and aphorisms that people sometimes use interchangeably with proverbs, but they all share that common goal, which is to express some truth or wisdom in a concise and memorable way.
So like different tools in the same toolbox.
Precisely. And what's really cool is that proverbs are still being created today. Dr. Hildebrandt actually uses the example of go woke, go broke, to show that this is still happening.
That's interesting. I mean, it's a pretty recent phrase, but it's already become part of our, you know, cultural conversation.
Right. It's amazing how these phrases can catch on and become part of how we communicate and think about the world.
He also mentioned something called parmenology. Did I say that right? I had no idea there was a whole field dedicated to the study of proverbs.
It's pretty fascinating, isn't it? Parmenology. It just goes to show you that proverbs are a serious subject of study. Scholars are interested in understanding how they function, how they spread across cultures, and what they can tell us about human societies.
So it's not just your grandma spouting wisdom anymore. It's like a legitimate academic field. That's pretty cool.
Exactly. Now, moving on to something Dr. Hildebrandt calls the life cycle of a proverb. He talks about how they are often created in very specific situations. Like, you know, someone comes up with a clever saying to describe an event.
Oh, like a specific historical moment or something.
Yeah, something like that. And then over time, that saying gets detached from its original context and starts to circulate more broadly. And eventually, you know, it takes on a life of its own.
Like, don't cry over spilled milk. I mean, that probably came from an actual incident of someone, you know, spilling some milk and getting upset about it.
Right. And over time, it becomes this general piece of advice that you can apply to many situations, not just about spilled milk anymore.
So it's like taking a tool from your toolbox and finding new ways to use it. Right.
That's a great analogy.
Like, don't cry over spilled milk could be used to, like, comfort someone who's lost their job or messed up on a project. Right. Encourage them to move on.
Exactly. The meaning can shift depending on the context and who's using it.
Which brings us to, I guess, the role of culture and how we understand proverbs.
That's a big one. Yeah. Because a saying might have totally different meanings in different parts of the world. Right. Like Dr. Hildebrandt uses a rolling stone gathers no moss as an example. In Scotland, it's actually seen as a positive thing. It means you're, you know, active and adaptable. But in England, it can have a more negative connotation, implying that someone is restless or unable to commit.
So the same proverb can have opposite meanings. That's wild. It's a good reminder to always think about the cultural context, right? Like, where did this saying come from and what are the values and beliefs of the people who use it?
Absolutely. Word-for-word translation isn't enough. You have to understand the culture that shapes a proverb's meaning.
Otherwise, you could totally misinterpret it.
Right.
So even seemingly simple proverbs can have hidden depths.
And that leads to another important question. Do all proverbs carry the same weight? Are they all meant to be taken as absolute truth?
That's a good question because, you know, it seems like some proverbs are more like strong advice, while others are just observations about life.
You've hit on a key point there. Dr. Hildebrandt introduces five categories of proverbial authority, and he suggests that some are meant to be like universal mandates, like love your neighbor as yourself. These are like principles to live by, you know, moral imperatives.
Well, others are more like, I don't know, guidelines or observations about how things usually work.
Exactly. He calls those ideal confirming exhortations. Think of early to bed, early to rise makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise. It's good advice, generally speaking, but, you know, there are plenty of night owls out there who are doing just fine.
Right. I'm definitely a night owl myself.
Me too, actually.
So we've got these different levels of authority. It's not a one-size-fits-all situation with proverbs.
Right. It's almost like, you know, some proverbs are meant to be prescriptive, telling you what to do, while others are more descriptive, just reflecting a truth about the world.
And that's where critical thinking comes in, right? We can't just blindly accept every proverb as gospel truth. We have to think about the context, the intention, and, you know, even the category of authority that Dr. Hildebrandt talks about.
I think that's a great place to pause for now. We've covered a lot of ground already, and there's so much more to explore in the world of proverbs. Let's pick up this fascinating conversation in our next segment.
That sounds great. We'll be back soon with more from our deep dive into proverbial wisdom. See you then.
So picking up where we left off, we were talking about how proverbs have different levels of authority, right? It's not like every proverb is meant to be taken as, you know, this absolute truth that you have to follow no matter what.
Right. And it's up to us to figure out how to apply them to our own lives.
Exactly. And, you know, Dr. Hildebrandt, he actually delves into the different forms and structures of proverbs, you know, like how they are put together.
Oh, interesting. So we're going beyond just the content of the proverb and actually looking at like mechanics of it.
Yeah. He starts by talking about what he calls instructions versus sentence sayings. Instructions are, you know, well, they're more like actual instructions, right? They lay out a course in action and out of principle.
So like a how-to guide for living.
Exactly. Think of it like, you know, a parent giving detailed advice to a child.
And those sentence sayings, are those like the classic proverbs that we're used to, like a stitch in time saves nine or something?
Precisely.
Okay, so the book of Proverbs, does it have both of these?
It does. It's interesting, actually. The first nine chapters are full of instructions, you know? It's like almost like a manual for how to live a wise and righteous life.
And then after that, it switches to sentence sayings.
Right. From chapter 10 onward, you get more of those classic sentence sayings covering all sorts of topics like wealth, poverty, friendship, even laziness.
Oh, I'm sure there are some good ones about laziness in there.
Oh, there are. But even within those sentence sayings, there are like a bunch of different forms. There are admonitions, which are like warnings or commands, you know, urging you to do something or to avoid something.
Like, don't put all your eggs in one basket. Is that an admonition?
Exactly. And then there are those, you know, numerical sayings, you know, those three things, four things structures.
Oh, yeah. Like, three things are too amazing for me, four I do not understand. Something like that.
That's it. And Dr. Hildebrandt explains that, you know, those aren't meant to be exhaustive lists. They're more about emphasizing certain qualities.
Like the mystery and wonder of the natural world or the limits of human understanding.
Exactly. Then you have what are called better than sayings.
Oh, like better a poor man who walks in integrity than a rich man who is crooked in his ways, that kind of thing.
Exactly. And those often offer really practical wisdom for, you know, how to live a good life.
Prioritizing values over wealth or status.
Right. And Dr. Hildebrandt points out that sometimes those better than sayings get even more elaborate, you know, with additional elements added on.
Oh, interesting. So they're like building upon a simple comparison.
Yeah, adding nuance and complexity.
So what else is there?
Well, there are what are called comparative sayings. These often use very vivid imagery to make point.
Oh, like metaphors.
Similar, but they often use like or as, you know, making a direct comparison between two things.
Okay, so like what's an example of that?
Well, he gives the example like a city whose walls are broken through is a person who lacks self-control. Pretty powerful imagery, right?
Wow, yeah. You can really picture that. Lack of self-control is this like vulnerable city.
Right. And Dr. Hildebrandt notes that certain chapters in Proverbs, like chapters 25 and 26, are packed with these comparative sayings.
So it's like a stylistic choice almost.
Exactly. Now, there are also what he calls abomination sayings.
Abomination sayings. What are those?
These are basically pronouncements about things that are detestable to God, like dishonesty or injustice.
Like, the Lord detests dishonest scales, but accurate weights find his favor, that sort of thing.
Perfect example. And then we have the Beatitudes.
Beatitudes. Aren't those more from the New Testament, like, blessed are the peacemakers?
Well, yes, they're famous from the Sermon on the Mount, but you actually find similar structures in the book of Proverbs as well.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah. They often start with the word blessed and pronounce a blessing on those who embody certain virtues.
So, like, blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy, kind of thing.
Exactly. And then you have what are called Yahweh sayings, which are Proverbs that specifically mention God by name. These often highlight, you know, God's role in human affairs.
Emphasizing his sovereignty and justice.
Precisely. Now, Dr. Hildebrandt also gets into the possible origins of Proverbs. He suggests they could have come from schools or families or even royal courts.
So these sayings were circulating in different parts of society.
That's right. Imagine a scribe in a royal court diligently collecting wise sayings to advise the king or a parent passing down age-old wisdom to their children.
It really paints this picture of how proverbs were woven into the fabric of everyday life.
Yeah, and he emphasizes that, you know, these different settings aren't mutually exclusive. A proverb that originated in a family setting could easily find its way into a school or a royal court.
Right, because good advice is good advice no matter where it comes from.
Exactly. Now, let's talk about the poetry of proverbs. Dr. Hildebrandt, he really gets into the nuts and bolts of the techniques used in Hebrew poetry that make these sayings so memorable and thought-provoking.
Okay, so like the structure and the rhythm of the language.
Yes. One of the key techniques he talks about is parallelism.
Parallelism. I remember him mentioning that earlier. It's about how the two lines of a proverb relate to each other, right?
Exactly. It's like this dance between two lines. They might express similar ideas or contrasting ideas, or they might build upon each other to create a more complex thought. And there are different types of parallelism, like synonymous parallelism, where the two lines basically say the same thing in different words.
Like, the Lord detests dishonest scales, but accurate weights find his favor. Is that an example?
Yes, perfect example. And then there's antithetic parallelism, where the two lines present contrasting ideas.
Oh, like a wise son brings joy to his father, but a foolish son is a grief to his mother.
Exactly. It's setting up those two opposite scenarios to highlight the difference.
And there was like another type, right?
Right. There's emblematic parallelism, which uses metaphors or similes. And then there's synthetic parallelism, where the lines sort of develop a thought in a more complex way. It's pretty amazing, you know, how much artistry and thought went into crafting these proverbs.
Yeah. It's like they're little masterpieces of language, aren't they?
They really are. And it's not just parallelism. Dr. Hildebrandt also explores the use of figures of speech in proverbs. Remember metonymy?
Metonymy. Refresh my memory.
It's where you use a word to represent something that's closely associated with it, like, you know, using the crown to refer to the king or the monarchy.
Oh, right.
And then there's synecdoche, which is kind of a specific type of metonymy where a part represents the whole, like saying wheels to refer to a car.
Got it. So what other figures of speech do they use?
Well, there's hyperbole, which is exaggeration for effect.
Oh, like that proverb about putting a knife to your throat if you have a big appetite.
Exactly. Obviously, not meant to be taken literally, but it gets the point across.
It's a funny image, though.
And finally, there's personification, where you give human qualities to, you know, inanimate objects or abstract concepts. And he points out how wisdom is often personified in proverbs, especially in those first 9 chapters.
Right. Wisdom is portrayed as this, like, wise woman who is inviting the young to learn from her.
Exactly. She's almost like a character in a story.
That's so interesting. So are there any other literary devices he talks about?
Well, he then goes into, you know, the themes and vocabulary that are commonly found in proverbs. Certain words like fool, wise, righteous, wicked, they pop up a lot, connecting them to this broader tradition of wisdom literature.
Right, because those are the kind of core concepts that wisdom literature deals with.
Exactly. And he points out the frequent use of contrasting word pairs, like wise and foolish, or righteous and wicked. And these contrasts often form the basis for the proverb's teaching, you know, urging you to choose the path of wisdom and righteousness.
It's like they're setting up a choice, right? Like, which path will you choose?
Exactly. And then there are, you know, like these overarching themes that dominate the proverbial landscape. Dr. Hildebrandt highlights the tension between righteousness and wickedness, you know, the importance of wisdom and diligence, and the consequences of folly and laziness.
Those are pretty universal themes, aren't they?
They really are. And then he does something, you know, kind of interesting. He talks about what's not found in proverbs.
What's not found? What do you mean?
Well, certain topics that are very prominent in other parts of the Old Testament, they're noticeably absent from the book of Proverbs. There's no mention of the temple, the priesthood, or the prophets. And there are no references to, like, Israel's redemptive history or the great salvation acts of God.
So it's almost like Proverbs exists in this separate realm, you know, focusing on practical wisdom for everyday life rather than religious rituals or, like, grand narratives of salvation.
That's a really good way to put it. And he also notes the absence of, you know, specific place names, people's names, names of people groups, except for those in the titles. It's as if the book of Proverbs is intentionally universal in its scope.
Right. Like, it's trying to offer wisdom that is relevant to all people, regardless of their background.
Precisely. Which is pretty amazing when you think about it. I mean, these proverbs were written thousands of years ago, but they still speak to us today.
They really do. It's like human nature hasn't really changed that much.
Exactly. Now, Dr. Hildebrandt gets even deeper into the structure of proverbs by introducing what he calls deep structure classifications.
Deep structure classification sounds complicated.
It is a bit technical, but basically he's looking at the underlying relationships between different elements within a proverb.
Okay, so like the building blocks of a proverb.
Yeah, like what are the fundamental pieces that give it meaning? And he identifies 8 categories based on these relationships. There's character consequence, character act, character evaluation, act consequence, act evaluation, and appearance reality.
Wow, that's quite a list. I'm not sure I can keep all those straight.
Don't worry about memorizing them. The key takeaway here is that he's like really trying to dissect the anatomy of a proverb.
Got it. Analyze how they're put together.
Right. And one thing he notes is that the character consequence structure is far more common than the act consequence structure.
What's that mean?
Well, it suggests that the Book of Proverbs places more emphasis on cultivating a virtuous character than simply performing good deeds.
So it's not just about doing the right things. It's about being the right kind of person.
Exactly. Now, he then shifts his focus to what are called compositional units, basically how individual proverbs are grouped together to create larger sections and themes. And he starts by discussing the Septuagint, which is the Greek translation of the Hebrew Bible.
Okay.
And the Septuagint, it actually rearranges some of the proverb collections, suggesting that the order that we see in our modern Bibles, you know, might not be the original order.
So the way the Proverbs are arranged could affect how we interpret them.
It could, yeah. And he highlights the role of editors, you know, in shaping the Book of Proverbs. Like, he points out that the men of Hezekiah are credited with, you know, collecting and compiling some of Solomon's Proverbs.
So it's like they're curating the collection in a way.
Exactly. And it makes you wonder how their own perspectives might have influenced the final arrangement.
It's like, who decided what went where and why?
Right. Now, he then dives into the world of proverb pairs. These are 2 consecutive proverbs that are linked by, you know, a common theme, shared vocabulary, or maybe a contrasting structure.
So they are like in conversation with each other.
Yeah, like they're bouncing ideas off of each other, offering different perspectives.
So it's like they acknowledge that wisdom isn't always black and white.
Exactly. It embraces the complexity.
I like that. What's an example of a proverb pair?
Well, he discusses Proverbs 26.4 and 5. Verse 4 says, "Don't answer a fool according to his folly, or you yourself will be just like him." And then verse 5 says, "Answer a fool according to his folly, or he will be wise in his own eyes."
Wait, so which is it? Do you answer a fool or not?
That's the point. It's meant to make you think. The 2 proverbs, when considered together, offer a more nuanced perspective on, you know, dealing with foolishness.
So sometimes there's no easy answer.
Right. And he also points out the unique acrostic structure of the proverb in Proverbs 31.10-31. Each line starts with a consecutive letter of the Hebrew alphabet.
Oh, wow. So it's like a literary device.
It is. It's really cool, actually. It adds this sense of completeness and also emphasizes the virtues of the wife of noble character described in the proverb.
Very clever.
Beyond pairs, he also talks about proverb strings or clusters where, you know, multiple proverbs are grouped together based on shared themes or vocabulary.
So it's like they're building upon each other, reinforcing certain ideas.
Exactly. And finally, he discusses the major collectional units within the Book of Proverbs. He points out the different styles and themes of these sections, suggesting they might have originated in different settings or were put together by, you know, different editors.
So it's like we're getting a glimpse behind the scenes.
Right. We're seeing how this book was assembled over time.
That's really fascinating.
And he also points out this collection of sayings of the wise found in Proverbs 22.17-24.34, which have some similarities to an ancient Egyptian wisdom text called the Instructions of Amenemope.
So the wisdom in Proverbs wasn't created in a vacuum, right? It was part of a larger conversation happening across different cultures.
Exactly. Now, as we approach the end of Dr. Hildebrandt's lecture, he really leaves us with some powerful reflections on, you know, the significance and lasting impact of Proverbs.
Yeah, we've really been on a journey with him, haven't we?
He emphasizes the power of Proverbs to, you know, encourage personal growth, to help us make responsible choices, and to guide us towards a life, you know, lived in reverence for God.
It's a good reminder that these sayings aren't just, you know, dusty relics of the past. They contain wisdom that is still relevant for us today.
Absolutely. And he reminds us that, you know, Proverbs aren't meant to be these rigid rules or guarantees, but rather signposts pointing us towards truth and wisdom.
Right. They're like guideposts, not like, you know, a GPS that tells you exactly where to go.
That's a good analogy. And he encourages us to, you know, embrace the paradoxical nature of Proverbs, to wrestle with their multiple meanings, and to apply them thoughtfully to our own, you know, complex lives.
Because life is messy, isn't it? And these Proverbs, they acknowledge that messiness. They don't pretend to have all the answers, but they offer us like a way to think about things, a way to approach life's challenges.
Exactly. And, you know, he reminds us that Proverbs are the wit of one and the wisdom of many, capturing, you know, the collective experience and insight of countless generations.
It's amazing to think about how these sayings have been passed down through the centuries, connecting us to people from the distant past.
And he ends with this really powerful statement, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom." It's a reminder that, you know, true wisdom ultimately comes from a right relationship with God.
The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. That's a powerful statement to end on. I feel like we've only scratched the surface of this topic.
Oh, yeah. There's always more to uncover. And, you know, one thing that Dr. Hildebrandt mentioned that I thought was really interesting was this idea that Proverbs can be playful, almost like, you know, riddles or brain teaser.
Oh, yeah. I remember him talking about those contradictory Proverbs where, you know, two sayings seem to, like, clash with each other.
Exactly. Like he gave that example, you know, from those Sumerian proverbs, from 3,600 oxen, there is no dung. It doesn't make a lot of sense on the surface, does it?
No, not really. It sounds kind of absurd, actually. What's the point of a proverb that seems, you know, nonsensical?
Well, I think it's about sparking our curiosity, right? Challenging us to think beyond the literal meaning. Because, you know, proverbs aren't always meant to be these straightforward instructions or pronouncements. Sometimes they're meant to provoke us, to make us think.
So it's like a puzzle. You know, encouraging us to figure out the deeper meaning.
Exactly. And he also talked about these things called proverb duels, where two proverbs are kind of pitted against each other, you know, like in a verbal sparring match.
Like a debate, but using proverbs as your arguments.
Right. And I think, you know, it's a fun way to explore those different perspectives and to acknowledge that, you know, there isn't always one right answer. Wisdom is often messy and complicated.
And proverbs embrace that.
They do. And, you know, he spent some time talking about the Hebrew word for proverb, mashal. And how it actually has this like wider range of meanings than just, you know, those short, pithy sayings we think of.
Oh, interesting. So it's not just limited to like the classic proverb form.
Right. It can also refer to things like, you know, popular sayings, riddles, songs, even prophetic messages. It shows that proverbial wisdom isn't, you know, confined to one specific form. It's a way of thinking, a way of looking at the world.
Like a lens.
Exactly. And, you know, he also talked about how proverbs often use sound techniques like, you know, rhyme or alliteration in English to make them more memorable.
Oh, right. Like practice makes perfect or early to bed, early to rise. Those just roll off the tongue.
Exactly. And it makes sense, right? I mean, proverbs are meant to be easily remembered and passed down. So those sound techniques, they really help with that.
Yeah, they make them catchy and memorable.
Right. And Hebrew proverbs have their own sound techniques, too, often involving the repetition of sounds or syllables. It's like, you know, there's this musicality built into the language itself.
Fascinating. So it's not just the meaning of the word. It's also how they sound.
Right. And, you know, he circled back to parallelism, explaining how it's not just a poetic device, but also a structural element, you know, that shapes how proverbs are put together.
Okay. Remind me again, what is parallelism?
Basically, it's how the two lines of a proverb relate to together. They often mirror each other in some way, you know, whether it's through similar ideas or contrasting ideas or building upon a thought.
Right, right. And that parallel structure makes the proverb more memorable, right?
It does. It makes it more balanced, more pleasing to hear, and yeah, definitely easier to remember. It also highlights the relationship between those two lines, encouraging us to, you know, to consider how they work together to convey the meaning.
Like a dance between words and ideas.
That's a beautiful way to put it. He also revisited those figures of speech we talked about earlier, things like metonymy, synecdoche, hyperbole, and personification.
Right, right. Using language in creative ways to get the point across.
Exactly. And those figures of speech, they add layers of meaning to the proverbs. You know, they make them more vivid and engaging and often more thought-provoking. It's like they're painting pictures with words, inviting us to see the world in new ways.
It's amazing how much depth and nuance there is to these seemingly simple sayings.
I know, right? And, you know, Dr. Hildebrand concluded his lecture by emphasizing the, you know, the enduring relevance of proverbs.
He really wants us to see them as living words, right? Not just something from the past.
Exactly. He encouraged us to see them, you know, not as dusty relics of the past, but as these like living words that can still speak to us today, you know, offering guidance and wisdom and even a touch of humor.
Because we can all use a little bit of wisdom and humor in our lives, right?
Absolutely. And so as we, you know, kind of wrap up our deep dive into the world of Proverbs, I'm curious, what are your final takeaways? What will you take with you from this exploration?
Well, I think the biggest takeaway for me is just the sheer depth and complexity of proverbial wisdom. You know, I used to think of Proverbs as these simple little sayings, but now I see them as these intricate expressions of human experience and insight. and I'm excited to keep exploring them and discovering new layers of meaning. What about you?
I think for me, it's the reminder that Proverbs aren't just about, you know, memorizing catchy phrases, but they're about engaging with these timeless truths and applying them to our own lives. They offer us a way to connect with the wisdom of the past, to grapple with the challenges of the present, and to, you know, navigate the uncertainties of the future. So as you go about your day, keep your ears open for those proverbs, you know, those little nuggets of wisdom that are all around us, and take a moment to ponder them to see how they might resonate with your own experiences.
Beautifully said. It's a great note to end on. Thank you so much for sharing your expertise and insights with us. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the fascinating world of Proverbs. We hope you've enjoyed the journey and that you'll keep exploring and pondering these timeless gems of wisdom. Until next time, happy pondering.